miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, as that wonderful announcer said. And we have a great guest staying with us, Gary Ginsberg, his website, whatstoxic.com. He was talking to us about PERC and the problems of it. You'd think that, Gary, high-end apartments, you would think they're more likely to be dry cleaning in high-end apartment buildings than in what you would call low-end apartment buildings. That's not true, eh?
Right. It's true, Mike, but in New York City, with that kind of a density of people, you're going to find the dry cleaner anywhere because, you know, there's just a lot of people to service. So in some of the low-end apartment buildings, though, they don't take the ventilation precautions and protecting the rest of the building precautions that in the high-end places. So there is this what we call economic justice disparity in that regard. And you just hate to see people who, because of their income level, being environmentally discriminated against. But that's sort of what is going on. It's just one example of how that can occur. Now, as you mentioned, PERC is being phased out, at least in some parts of the country, from dry cleaning. We don't need PERC to dry clean our clothes anymore. There are safer solvents. And so California has a ban that is being phased in over the course of the next 5 or so years. New York City does not, to my knowledge, but it may have one at some point. Interestingly, though, in buildings that didn't have a dry cleaner inside the building, then the higher income people had more exposure to PERC because they're the ones who did more dry cleaning, and it does off gas and get into your apartment. If you're living in an apartment, you may not have a place to hang your clothing. But again, the bottom line message is if you do use a dry cleaner and it is using PERC, then you should air it out in a breezeway, in a garage, before you bring the clothes into your closet.
So, and so air it out. Now, what can you do if you're living in one of these? Because this is really a highly volatile, meaning it goes every place that air goes. And the exhaust ducts, I imagine, from the dry cleaner contaminate the exhaust ducts from some of the apartments. And that's probably where some of it comes from. But what's someone to do? Is there a way of filtering it out?
Get this, it even, because it's fat soluble, it will dissolve to the butter sitting out on your table.
Wow. So what do you do if you live in an apartment building with a dry cleaner in it?
Well,
is the only answer moving?
You could consider moving, obviously, but you need to ask the building management to test for PERC in your apartment, and then if it's above regulatory thresholds, target indoor air concentrations, they need to be doing a better job. This study that I just referred to in New York City is an excellent study. It's understandable for the lay public, at least, you know, the basics of it are, and they could use that as evidence that they could have a problem. You should demand testing.
Gotcha. So demanding testing is what you can do. And look at the tests. Okay, and I would suggest that if you are moving to an apartment, like my son and daughter will do, that I'm going to make sure they move to an apartment where there's no dry cleaning establishment in that apartment building.
Dry cleaning or nail salons? Nail salons is the other type of business that tends to spread its solvents all over the place.
And that probably is in a lot of... in New York City, at least, in a lot of establishments. Okay, let's talk about Salt Lake City residents burning wood and what's their responsibility to the rest of the community.
Yes. Well, you know, we often talk about air pollution, particulate air pollution. We talk about Beijing. But this is all close to the home. It's hugely controversial. Think about this. An entire county, Salt Lake City and surrounding towns, considering starting next November for the entire winter, banning all wood burning for residential home heating. I mean, you know how many people out there probably have a wood stove and use the plentiful wood resource that they've got? And they might be told by the town fathers that there's too much choking air pollution in the wintertime coming from the accumulation of wood stoves that are putting all that particulate. And wood, burning wood is not particularly clean. I mean, we think of it as being environmentally good because it's a renewable resource, but it is one of the dirtier ways to heat your home. And, you know, it's not that unusual for us in Connecticut to get calls, oh, the neighbor across the street whose roof line is a little bit below ours and the smoke comes right into our windows when the wind blows the wrong way. You know, smoke from wood stoves, if you're in a crowded area, if you're in Salt Lake City proper, you know, you could be creating a big pollution problem. So they're considering banning it. So I think even if they don't come out with an outright ban, they're going to have some kind of a lid put on wood burning because they've got mountains that trap the pollution, they've got inversions. The wintertime is known for an inversion period in places like the desert Southwest. Bozeman, Montana, they've got no burn days because of the inversions out in the mountains there. And so many people burn with wood that you could see the haze hanging in the hill. So like when you go to a campground and again, why is there all this smoke all of a sudden? Because everybody's burning a fire. So, I think the bottom line, everybody's going to be watching what happens in Salt Lake City to see how serious we are as a country going to get with controlling wood smoke. If you are in a rural area, I don't think it's a problem. Suburbia, it could be more of a problem. Urban environments like Salt Lake City, major health issue.
Now, what about the Vermont area? That's the other area I've seen huge numbers of if you will, stoves in.
Yeah, there's a lot of wood stoves in Vermont. Obviously, they've got a lot of wood. There, it's more rural, more spread out, fewer inversion situations, not as much of a public health issue. I would say that there was recent legislation proposed, federal legislation proposed by EPA to have the phase three, I think it's called, wood stoves required for all, you know, with catalytic converters built in. That would be good enough for a place like Vermont. Would it be good enough for Salt Lake City with the density of wood stoves they've got there? It would help. I know a lot of people have backlash. They don't want to spend an extra $500 or $1,000 for an EPA-style wood stove, but that is, at a minimum, what Salt Lake City should be looking at.
So, Gary, fantastic sections, fantastic information. I think the one I'm going to make sure I take home when I'm not traveling to Vietnam, don't have to worry about their eggs, but I certainly have to worry about kids in an establishment that has either a nail salon or a dry cleaner on the first floor. Always, by the way, when you get your dry cleaning, air it out outside. Don't keep it in that plastic bag. Air it out outside before you try and even think about putting it on you.
Exactly.
Thanks very much.
All right, talk to you next week.
Look forward to it. Sonar, how much time do we have? I'm getting 60 seconds. Okay, so we can do a quick story, if you will, which I'll try and get. And there's one long story, but this is a quick story that if you have lunch periods in school after the recess rather than before the recess, you normally kids rush through lunch to go to recess. If you change the order and have the recess first, the kids take longer to eat, they eat more completely, and they eat many more fruits and vegetables. It's up by 100%. They double their fruits and vegetable consumption compared to the other way. So if you want your school board to do things more rationally, just tell them that recess, so that the kids don't run fast to recess, they get the lunch period after recess. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well, and we'll be right back with the final great segments.
Are you one one of the millions of Americans whose thyroid gland isn't functioning the way it's supposed to? Well, now there's hope. Introducing Actolin. Actolin is a dietary supplement that contains 17 ingredients that support thyroid function, your adrenal health, your energy metabolism, and your immune health. Actolin's nutrients were handpicked by the renowned holistic practitioner, Dr. David Brownstein. And now, for a limited time, you can get a risk-free trial of Actolin when you enroll in our convenient Smart Ship program and cover the first low shipping and handling fee of $4.95. That's right. Try Actolin as part of our risk-free trial and just pay $4.95 shipping. Learn more and sign up today at ActolinRadio.com. That's ActolinRadio.com or call 800-500-HEALTH. That's 800-500-4325. And mention promo code Actolin Radio. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease.
Every 39 seconds, an adult dies from a heart attack, stroke, or related disease. These conditions claim the lives of more than 800,000 adults each year and are largely preventable. Two leading risks for heart disease and stroke are high blood pressure and high cholesterol, serious conditions that often have no symptoms. 68 million adults have high blood pressure, and 71 million have high cholesterol. Here's what you can do to reduce your risk. Take your prescription medications to control blood pressure or cholesterol. Eat a healthy diet that's low in salt, fat, and cholesterol, and full of fresh fruits and vegetables. Take a brisk 10-minute walk, 3 times a day, 5 days a week. Don't smoke. If you do, quit now. While you've been listening, one person has died from heart disease or stroke. You don't have to be next. Learn more about how to keep your heart healthy at www.cdc.gov/heartdisease.